I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
Welcome to The Mentor. I'm Mark Boris. Sex work has got to be the oldest form of business there is, and we still don't really know much about how it works. Samantha X is Australia's highest paid escort and is a best-selling author of Hooked, a book that thrust her into the world of fame when she published it in 2014, revealing what it's really like behind the scenes in the adult industry. Samantha X entered the escort business later in her life after leaving journalism to launch a career in sex work. There are two sides to the Samantha X brand, the life coach side and the Samantha X After Dark agency, which is also a successful e-commerce business selling lingerie and sex toys. Samantha X comes across all types of people, especially men, in her line of business. And you'll soon realise, as I did in our chat, that very little of her work is actually based upon sex. It's very much more about companionship, counselling, and psychology. So let's get into it. Samantha, or Samantha X, welcome to The Mentor.
Thank you, Mark. Thanks for having me. It's a bit weird doing it from home. I don't feel very sexy, but, you know, I'll do.
You look awesome. Don't worry.
Oh, thank you.
Before I get into what you're doing today, like in terms of your business, And what your businesses are, there's multiple streams on your business. I want to talk about Samantha and how she chose the career and the paths that she's now taking. But I want to go right back. You're English, aren't you?
I'm from London, yes. I'm a London.
You're from London, okay.
Born and bred.
So you're born and bred in London?
Yep. Yes.
You're not sitting on the regression couch here, but take me, where were you at school? Where were you at school? What was your story?
Okay, I mean, I never talk about my, because Samantha and my real name Amanda, they're two very different people. So I always talk about Samantha and Samantha's experiences. So for me to go and talk about Amanda, I haven't done that for a long time, but of course.
What was your mind?
No, I wouldn't mind at all. So I grew up in Wimbledon, which is a very posh suburb of London. And my mother is Persian and my father is an EastEnder. So I had a very privileged life. I went to Wimbledon High School for girls. I say naughty girls. And, you know, my family, I've got a brother and a sister. I was the eldest. My family, just a normal middle class London family. You know, there was nothing wrong with our family. It was, I mean, we had our usual dysfunction that most families have. But I had a happy childhood. I was probably very shy and insecure.
Were you a good student?
Look, I used to muck around a lot. My teachers, they liked me, but they used to say things like, Amanda is not a journalist yet, because I'd write my essays as if I was a journalist. I used to cheat in my exams. I was popular, but I was naughty.
Naughty being in what sense? I mean, just a bit like a little bit outlandish, or?
I used to bunk off school and smoke in the corner and
with other kids, though, not just on you.
Yeah, no, with other kids, with my girlfriends. And because it was an all-girls school, I didn't know boys. Like I didn't have any interaction with boys. They were this mystery, exciting, forbidden sex to me. I just grew up with girls. My brother was 8 years younger than me, so I never had friends that were boys.
Young Amanda, like in her late teens or whatever, she wanted to be a journalist. I think what I'm gathering, you always wanted to be a journalist.
Always.
And you got a dad who's an East Londoner. Now, that's characterising someone. What's equivalent in Sydney today?
Oh, God. I guess someone from out west. My dad, so he was an East Londoner, but he studied law and he became quite a well-known lawyer in London. So he doesn't speak with a Cockney accent. You know, he was quite softly spoken, my dad. Yeah, I think he taught me to be grounded. You know, even though we were an affluent family, we were a down-to-earth family. And my mum is from, you could describe her as a Persian princess, very glamorous, came from a really good family in Iran and moved to England when she was 5.
Did her family have influence on you growing up as a person? I mean, what do you remember about that? Was it like lots of feta and cool foods? Were you a great cook? What are we talking about here?
No, we were quite a small family. My mum's family lived in France and America. You know, Persian food every night. My mum's Muslim. We weren't not really a practicing Muslim, but she was always very glamorous and different. And I used to be embarrassed of that when I was younger. I used to be because it was like I didn't want to be different.
Yeah.
I didn't want to be different. I wanted to be English and or French. I used to lie to people and say I was French because being Persian was so foreign.
Yeah, totally. So, not today. Today it's seen as being exotic. But
today I love it. I tell everyone.
Then, like as a kid, that's probably a little bit confronting. I mean, you don't. I mean, I grew up in my mum was Irish, my dad was Greek, and my dad had a strong. Fairly strong accent when I was at school. He doesn't have these days anymore. When I was at school, he had an accent. I remember whenever he used to say the word mate, he used to say might. And I was really sort of conscious of that stupidly.
You're a kid, you want to be different when you're a kid.
You want to be the same, you're right.
Yeah, and I didn't want to be different. My mum's quite dark. You know, people would always ask where I was from and I just wanted to say Wimbledon.
In terms of looks, were you a good-looking young girl?
Look, I'm not going to say I was gorgeous or anything like that because I wasn't. I was an awkward, skinny kid. Look, I worked out from a very early age, though, that I had, as most women do, some kind of power over boys and men. I remember walking down the street in Wimbledon. There used to be a little sweet shop, lolly shop, and this man got out of his car and gave me a bunch of flowers. I must have been about 14. I had a few experiences like that and I thought, wow, I didn't know boys and men were like that, you know, about me, you know, and I was so shy, even though I came across as really outgoing, I still am extremely shy. And I realized that I was being validated by men, which is something I probably needed at the time. I felt quite invisible. So when men gave me attention, I didn't know how to handle it because I didn't know boys. I hadn't spoken to boys. The only time I was with boys was when I was drunk, like with all my girlfriends. So it was a novel thing for me. And it must have subconsciously stuck in my head.
Take me to when you've left school.
Mm-hmm.
I presume you're still in London and you became a journalist.
I went to university and I studied media and at the same time I was working in a newspaper in London 2 or 3 days a week. And then I freelanced for the Mirror Group, so the Mirror, and I got a job for the Sunday People and I loved it. I was a tabloid journalist and I used to chase people down the street. It was in that era of paparazzi and you know, talking about boundaries, the journalists had zero boundaries. We were told to get a story. I mean, I remember being told to steal a photograph of a celebrity in a restaurant. He was, I just did terrible things, to be honest. I chased, do you know Paulie Yates? Do you remember Paulie Yates?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, well, I had to chase her down the street, asking her if she was a bad mum because Bob Geldof called her a bad mum. Oh, it's just, looking back, I always say I went into the adult industry because it's a more ethical industry than journalism.
Many would agree with that.
yes.
You know, we used to have a thing here called the Daily Mirror and it was similar to the paper that you're talking about in the UK. I think the mirror there was a page three girl or page two girl.
Yeah, I love the page three girls.
Yeah, yeah. It was, well, we had one here too for many years. Me growing up as a kid. We had the Daily Mirror here, which became the Daily Telegraph today. But on page three of the Daily Mirror, every single day was a photograph of a scantily clad girl. And I remember one time when I was a young boy, 15 or 16, there was a photograph on page three of Brigitte Bardot standing up naked in the photo, but not, you couldn't see it because she had bubbles in the three places where you put the bubbles so that she concealed everything. Mm. And I remember tearing it out of the newspaper.
And then doing what with it?
Somewhere in my bedroom, or my mum, of course, people found it and confronted me with this and said, "What is it?" And I said, "I didn't have an answer for it. I just said I really like Brigitte Bardot." But so we did have a Daily Mirror. We did have tabloids. Mm-hmm. I grew up with tabloids. And it was usually the Murdoch Empire that controlled the tabloids. But can you tell us what the tabloid industry was like in London in those days?
Yes, I mean, gossip, celebrity, you know, lots of real life stories. You know, every celebrity whinged about being in the tabloids, but they all wanted to be in the tabloids. You know, they would feed us a lot of stories.
It was salacious too.
So salacious. Sex, you know, like, you know, gangbangs and sex and it was just, it was great. Look, it was fascinating for me. It was back in the day where there's long lunches and, you know, we could really say what we wanted to say, because I remember my editor saying once, you know, say what you want to say about this celebrity, make it up if you have to. They can't afford to sue us and they all want to be in the press anyway because it keeps them relevant. So, you know, I remember when I first came to Australia and I worked for a magazine and I was just like, bang, 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 just make it up, make it up, make it up. And my editor said, "Amanda, we don't make things up here in Australia." And I was like, "What? Do you actually write what people say?" You know, I had to get my head around that.
Who'd you work for here?
Oh, I worked for Marie Claire, Women's Day, New Idea. I worked for the Daily Telegraph for a while. But it was the media was so different here. And I remember when I got my job in Australia, I was talking to my colleagues at the tabloid newspaper and they said, "Why are you going to Australia? You don't come to Australia for your career." I sort of understood what they meant. And when I came here, I sort of understood that it was very different here.
Why did you come to Australia? Why did you leave London?
That's a good question. Especially nowadays, I think, why did I? Because I was burnt out. You know, I was 28, 27, 28. I knew if I stayed doing what I did in London, it wasn't going to end well. I mean, half the people I worked with were done for phone hacking. A few of them killed themselves or ended up in jail. I mean, for lots of reasons, really. I wanted to get away from my family, to be honest. I've never been to Australia, but I was just so fascinated by Australia. I just loved it. I used to go to the library and take books out in Australia and Sydney and just thought, I just knew I was going to end up there. And when I got offered my job, I was really unsure what to do because I just landed a really good job in London. I remember, and this is such a weird story, I remember being on a train in Waterloo Station and I was reading something called the Press Gazette, which is a newspaper for journalists. And I just thought to myself, I just need a sign of whether I should go to Australia. And no word of a lie, this man was pushing past people to come and talk to me on the train. And he said, "Oh, you're reading the Press Gazette. You must be a journalist." And I said, "I am." And he said, "My mum's a journalist." And I said, "Oh, right." He goes, "Yeah, she's a journalist in Sydney." I went, "I've just been offered a job in Sydney." And he said, "Oh, well, my mum works for That's Life magazine and she loves it." I said, "They've just offered me a job." And he said, "You should take that job." And I saw that as a massive sign. So that's why I came.
Did you come to Sydney or which part of Australia did you
go? I came to Sydney. I didn't know a soul. Yeah. But I just landed. I got the driver to take me to Bondi Beach because I just wanted to see Bondi Beach. And I sat there in the car and I got it and I thought, is this it? You know, it was a really cold, windy day. I thought it was going to be like the south of France. And I was so disappointed. But this is like 20 years ago when Bondi is not the place it is now. And I thought, this is Bondi Beach, you know, like the rundown houses, units, those mess everywhere, mattresses in the street. But yeah, I grew to love it. And I was, the first 2 years, I was pretty lonely. I didn't know anyone. I think it takes a while to make friends, good friends.
Totally.
So yeah, I just fell in love with Australia and I still love Australia.
So at this stage, you're a journalist. You're mm-hmm. still a journalist. Mm-hmm. What point did you think to yourself, well, what about the sex industry?
Oh, look, you know, again, from an early age, I was intrigued by the sex industry. I remember going to the south of France, which my family and I used to do every year for 8 weeks, and we stayed in Nice on the Promenade des Anglais, and I'm sure you've been to Nice. And I used to look out of the window of the balcony. I used to go to the balcony, and there was these glamorous women walking on the streets, getting picked up by Rolls-Royce, Bentleys, da-da-da. And I said to my mum, what are those women? And she said, les dames de la nuit, you know, women of the night. And I was just so fascinated by it. I used to thought they're so beautiful and intriguing and glamorous. And they'd get into these fancy cars. And I became a journalist, but it was still in my head. I still knew that I had some kind of power over men, and the adult industry was always in my head. Back in the day, I used to go through the back of the papers and just read the ads to the brothels and escorts and sex workers, and I was just so like, what is this world? It's so no one talks about this world. Separated from my partner, I was a single mother, 50-50 custody, and I was single for about a year and a half after the separation. And I just got dicked around by men. I was in my late 30s. I didn't have much patience for men who lied, and I still don't, or who promised the earth and delivered nothing. I was really sick of it. So I wanted to take a bit of control back. Yeah, I mean, I went to one interview, that was it. My intrigue button had hit, you know, like I was go, go, go. I just wanted to find out more, more, more. And I thought, I can do this. I can actually do this. And I remember seeing a series called Secret Diary of a London Call Girl. And I don't know whether you've seen it. It was based on a book called Belle de Jour. And it's a true story of a woman like me who became an escort in London. And that I was fixated on this show. And I used to watch it going, that's what I'm going to be like. I want to do that. So I eventually found this discreet boutique escort agency in North Sydney. And I remember my very first time I was there, I was shitting myself. And I remember being on the bed looking by myself. It was in a high-rise penthouse in North Sydney. And I was looking out at all these boats bobbing on the sparkly harbour. And I thought, what the fuck am I doing? Like, what am I doing? I was like 37, 38, sitting on this bed with some, you know, doctor on his way to see me. And I thought, fuck, I really wish I was on that boat right now. You know, I just couldn't. But, you know, as a journalist, it's really easy to detach yourself from the story. And I had completely detached myself from my story. So I created this character and I became that character. And that's how I could do the job, because Amanda wasn't there. Samantha was there. So Samantha was a woman that I really wanted to be. She was glamorous, confident, sexy, empowering. And I never felt that growing up.
That's very interesting.
Mm. So, yeah, that my first job, I was expected it to be sex swinging from the chandeliers, and it was just a very vanilla experience with most of it was talking. Of course, once it started, my addiction just went into overdrive. You know, I wanted to find out more. I wanted to speak to more men. I wanted to speak to women in the industry. I wanted to speak to my madam in the industry.
I'm intrigued by the things that would have been running through your head. You weren't doing it just because you earned a quid or made a couple hundred bucks, whatever it is you make.
No.
It sounds like you wanted actually to talk to people, find out more about what they're doing, why the customers and or the clients came in to see you, then what it's like to be the madam, what it's like to run this business. It sounds like you're going through a number or a series of questions that led you to, who knows where they're going to lead you to. But that's the thing that can create a so-called addiction. And this is not an addiction to sex, but it's an addiction to the intrigue of the sex industry.
Mm.
Is that a fair summary?
Yes. Yes. And I realized the sex industry is not about sex. And my skill as a journalist was getting truth out of people. I knew that people would talk to me about things. They would open up. I used to get celebrities to open up to me, real people, for example, whose kids have been murdered. They'd tell me things. And I heard time and time again, I've told you something I would never tell another person.
This is when you were a journalist.
Yes, when I was a journalist. So, and when I became an escort, I would hear the same thing from men. I remember my madam said, you can't ask them if they're married. You can't. So I would ask them stories to their lives. And that's what I was addicted to, is what men said. Because no one listens necessarily to what men think or men say. And I was privy to their secrets. And that's what I wrote my books about, it's not about sex. Sex is sex. Sex takes 2 minutes. Men pay thousands of dollars now for the connection and the experience. And every man to me is a story waiting to be told. And that's what I was addicted to.
It's quite incredible what you just said, because what you learned being in this industry, that these individuals who come into your environment, they're coming for sex, whatever, but they're not some sort of perverted sex fiend. There's an expectation from their point of view as to what they're going to get from it. And it's not necessarily, as you said, not sex or not necessarily just sex. It's something else. So would you be able to explain from a business point of view what your business does? What do you think when you were seeing a client, for example, what do you think they were after?
I've never had perverted kinky sex. My client, even when I want to have perverted kinky sex, you know, the clients would die. You know, there are times where I don't have sex at all. Men think they're booking you for sex, but they're actually not. And what they're looking for is someone to listen to them. And I hear so many times from men that they feel invisible, that they don't know their place in society anymore, that they would like to talk to women in bars, but they don't want to be accused of sexual harassment, or they're married and rightly or wrongly, they feel ignored, they have separate bedrooms, the intimacy has died. And I'm not just talking about sex, I'm talking about the connection, and that's what they're paying for. They're paying for someone to listen to them, someone to actually hear them, for them to have some kind of validation. The sex is very vanilla with all of them. You know, I don't want to offend any of my clients, but it's meat and two veg. You know, it's not, you know, they would be so petrified if, you know, I bought a whip or you know, or rubber or whatever. Yeah. You know, they're very normal men, from tradies to celebrities to CEOs to you know, you name it. But they all have that one thing in common, and that is a need, a basic human need for connection.
I often talk to people about what is the purpose of the business, you know, what the why, the so-called why of your business, and you just summarized it for me. It was to be able to obtain a connection, and maybe I might add something to it without any judgment.
Absolutely. And, you know, a lot of men who see me, you know, and I've had very successful men sobbing, you know, about whatever's going on in their life. And I quite often say, have you thought about talking to a therapist? And they all say, I would feel too judged.
That's very interesting. You've got to have a certain empathy, but also an attraction to that way of life. I'm not talking about sex. I'm not talking about being attracted to a man. I'm talking about being attracted to being able to listen and to talk to them. You're a person that people like to talk to or like to be in the company of. Because there's a perception about all this, you know, that looking like someone like out of a movie, and she's standing there at the bar and she's drinking a special cocktail that no one can pronounce or afford. You know, someone might like that. Others, I guess, want you to be just a normal person.
Yes, and I think a lot of women think this job is all five-star and first class. And don't get me wrong, there's a lot of that. But the number one request I get for outfits is activewear or jeans, you know, and no makeup. And, you know, I've got all these fancy outfits that I don't wear. I think when you're glamorous or, you know, the sort of experiences you're describing, men get very intimidated by that. They, you know, I have to know to bring it down to earth. When I walk into a hotel room, I'm the one with the power. Men are usually terrified, shaking terrified. And, you know, if I turn up in a dress with my Louboutins, and it's more even terrifying for them. They're just very basic creatures, very simple creatures, and I keep it simple. And it makes me laugh because all these women approach me now, Samantha, I want to be an escort. I love sex. I'm like, don't do this job for the sex. Do this because you have compassion and you really genuinely enjoy the company of men. And I say to them, you don't need to get all dressed up and fancy. Just look respectable and look as if you're meeting someone for a business meeting. That's what they like.
Well, we've gone from Amanda to Samantha, so I'm going to come back. Samantha X, I just want to go to the break and I'm going to come straight back. I want to talk to you about the two parts of your business, I mean the sex industry business, but also the other part, the empowering of women part of your business. But I want to go to the break and come straight back with Samantha X. Intriguing.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Samantha Rex, welcome back.
Thank you, Mark.
Now, we've established your journey into the sex industry. We have also established your, probably a big part of that is your experiences as a journalist and also what you learnt as a journalist, and maybe it seems like your attraction to understanding and or having the ability to get information out of people was part of that journey getting into the sex industry, because, you know, like you tend to know how to talk to people and get stuff out of people. And I was intrigued in the first half of this podcast about what you were saying, how you defined what you do and, more importantly, the purpose of what you do, and it's there to connect. You know that your clients need to connect. Now, you run a business which is – I don't know how to best describe it. How would you best describe your business? So what would you call Samantha X's business now?
I've got two. I've got Samantha X After Dark, and that is three components to that. There's the escort agency that we run. It's an advertising platform for male escorts and female escorts, and we have an e-commerce section. So we sell sex toys, e-books, my books. I've written two books. Vibrators, lingerie. The lingerie does really well. So there's three parts of it. And it's the first of its kind, really. We're not just an escort agency. We have everything for men and women and couples.
When you say you run Samantha X as an agency, is that a platform where men and women can offer their service, or is it a platform for where men and women can come to get the service?
So we have both. So we have men, female escorts around the country can advertise with us, and male escorts, which is also a booming business at the moment, can advertise with us. And we also have, separately to that, an agency where my business partner Vanessa and I manage girls. So male clients or married clients will come to us asking for a particular lady or a particular service. So we do both. And then we have our shop.
And what do you take, a clip? How does it work? How do you make your money?
So our ladies that work for us are $660 an hour, and we take 40% of that. So
you take a clip, yep.
Yes, that's how we make our money, through the agency. We take a clip of that, yeah. And we're very, you know, clients come to us because they trust the brand. They trust our brand, which is built on integrity and sophistication and honesty. And I think honesty is a massive thing in the adult industry, because there's a lot of smoke and mirrors. And because people come to the brand because of Samantha, you know, maybe they've read my books or they've read my articles or they've Googled me, and they'd, you know, it's not often someone puts their real face to the industry. Usually the escort agencies are behind nameless, faceless people, quite often men who manage them. So we are all female, myself and my amazing business partner. And we get men who are looking for that honesty.
Interesting. You talked about one of the things you used to be very interested in, I'm sure you still are, is the truth. And, you know, honesty and truth sort of go together. In terms of your business's brand, the Samantha X brand, I think what you're saying to me is it stands for honesty. What does that mean to a client? And maybe to also one of your staff.
Well, I guess in the adult industry is notorious for, fake photographs, women who pretend to be someone they're not. Unfortunately, a lot of men get ripped off, and a lot of women get ripped off too, but then a lot of men get ripped off. There's, I know even now girls who take someone's money and then do a runner. The ad could say, I'm Brazilian 21-year-old, and the man turn up and it's a 50-year-old from Penrith, So honesty is something that hasn't been that prevalent in the adult industry, and that's what I wanted to change. What you see is what you get, and our women are the women that we have there actually want to be there. And they're mature women. We very rarely employ young girls. And they're mature women. The most popular type of woman that is requested is age 40 plus, and that's because they have life experience and there's no bullshit. And I can't stand bullshit in any form of my life. I live an authentic life. And I really expect the women who work for us to as well, and certainly the clients. But I'm the gatekeeper to my industry, to the girls, and I'm the one that takes the bookings. And if I think someone's a dickhead, they don't get a chance of seeing my girls. I've had women that say, I don't want to see that client, and I absolutely. And I always tell the women that they're the ones in control. And if something doesn't feel right or seem right, it's not right. And if you don't feel comfortable, you get out of the room. That's never happened. We've never had that, because I'm experienced enough in this industry now that I can just tell, even by the way a man writes a text message, if he's going to be a dick or not.
Every resource is rare, particularly people. That's the rarest thing, particularly the type of people you're looking for, high quality people. How do you source people? I mean, how do you find people to come to you?
No, they come to us. I mean, particularly when I have a column in the newspaper or when my second book came out, we were inundated. We are inundated with women who want to work for us. Doctors, lawyers, you name it. We've had all sorts. And they all have the one thing in common. They want to feel empowered. They're in their 40s or their 50s or their 60s even. We had someone in their 60s who was very successful with us, for whatever reason, mostly because they've had a nasty divorce. They've lost their confidence. They want to feel empowered, strong and sexy again. And it's really nice to see them become that person. There's no type of woman. It's any woman, but they have to have compassion and warmth. And that's what I look for. I don't look for perfect bodies. I don't look for youth. I look for life experience, warmth and compassion, because those are the women that would do really well. And age is a huge thing in this job. I say to women, don't lie about your age. Don't make yourself younger. If anything, make yourself older.
This may be a fairly naive question to ask, but is there any sort of training involved?
Yes, and it's nothing to do with sex. Nothing to do with sex. I very rarely talk about sex to anybody. I don't really write about sex. I don't really, I get very embarrassed talking about sex. It's more the way they carry themselves. Very simple things like money, how to take the money, how to behave personality-wise, and what to talk about, and the logistics of how to get them to the hotel room, or in a very discreet way, what to wear. Don't wear pretty woman outfit, just wear conservative, very conservative.
That's what I was seeing on before. Pretty woman. That was the movie I was seeing on. Pretty woman. Whatever her name is, the one with the red hair.
Julia Roberts. Yeah.
Roberts. That's it. If I was trying to pigeonhole this, this type of person, that's sort of went through my mind originally. But it's actually, you're right. It's quite intimidating, etc.
Yes.
And it's really interesting what you just said about the logistics of how to get into the hotel room.
Yes.
Discreetly. But equally, the act of sex, as opposed to all the things that happened before and after, all those things before that you just mentioned, how you dress, how you carry yourself, how you greet somebody, they're all sexy. I mean, potentially. They're all attractive. Because I remember listening to, I think it was Sting, the musician, once explaining, he used to say he had sex for 8 hours at a time. And I said, that's ridiculous. Who can do that? And
show off.
But then he explained this whole process of having sex was about how he got up in the morning. I'm just making this up as I go along now, but how he got up in the morning, how he'd make perhaps a cup of tea for his partner, and then how we'd sit down and have the cup of tea with her, and how we'd look at her, how he might touch her during the day, blah, 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 right through to the last moment and then afterwards as well. So his 8 hours of sex was not sex, the sex act.
It
was
I know what you mean. Yeah.
And, maybe some of your workers might think to themselves, oh, this has got to be like a porn movie or something like that. And, you know, and they're all paid actors and they've probably got plenty of props going on. They've got plenty of help, et cetera, in lots of all sorts of cases. And it's all bullshit anyway.
Yes.
They must be, especially the first timers, they must be terrified.
Terrified, yes, but not as terrified as the clients.
No.
Not as I've had clients that are given conferences and spoken in front of thousands, but put them in a hotel room with a naked woman, and I've had clients that can't even hold a glass of water without shaking. You know, it's the power of the female, and you know, women have the power. Absolutely. I've always believed women have the power. From a very early age, when the man got out of his car and gave me flowers, I realized I have the power. And I've made a business out of that now. I've capitalized on that. And I don't blame men for being in awe of women. I'm in awe of women. We can be so feminine and strong. And a lot of these businessmen, and I'm sure you'll understand, they're so sick of being the tough one. They want some kindness and some female energy around them where they can be themselves. And that's what our women, our angels do, is they help men be themselves. Because when we're naked, everyone's the same level. You know, you can run multi-million dollar companies, but take your clothes off, you're no different to anyone else.
It's funny, my mum, when I was in my later 20s, I was a single guy and I had a girlfriend, a different one every week. And I used to say, you know, I'd bring someone around who I thought was really good looking and try and – and my mum used to say, Mark, they're all cats in the dark. She'd say, make sure that, you know, she has a good personality, she's a good person, she understands you, blah, 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 you know, and those sorts of things. Mum was trying to explain to me. Of course, I had no interest in listening to her. Mum was trying to tell me at that stage. But she just said what you just said. I mean, you know, once the lights are out, well, they're naked. It's sort of it's a transaction happens, you know what I mean? And but it's what happens before and after that's the really important bit, and it's the enduring parts that are really important. So I'd say then, Samantha X, the business of matching workers with clients, do you say, look, here's the list, you go through it, Mr. Client, or you choose what you want, or do you try to match people up?
A bit of both. You know, I know the clients now very, very well. And I know they're not going to want a young 25-year-old. I know they will want this, you know, a particular client will want a curvy 50-year-old. And sometimes it is hard to find those kind of women. It's a very transient industry. We've had women that work for our agencies that then go on to be independent escorts once they get a hang of the industry or the job. But yes, I know my clients very, very well. And at the moment during lockdown, they're really struggling. And again, it's not about sex. It's struggling for intimacy and connection. So I think a lot of sex workers will really be extremely busy when we open again.
Well, can I ask you, what happens during lockdown, Samantha? Like, I don't want to sound like a smart ass, but it's sort of like an essential service to some extent. But
absolutely.
What are the rules?
Well, we can't work. We've had to shut up 2/3 of our business. Samantha X After Dark, Samantha X Angels, we have completely shut the doors on at the moment. And what is selling really well, what has a 40% increase, is our sex toys and lingerie at the moment, which is great. But yeah, men are craving the intimacy at the moment. We've had phone calls from all around the country and the world, actually. It makes me laugh because not even a pandemic will stop men. You know, they don't care. They just want to have a woman. They just want to be with a woman. And a lot of my marriage clients, rightly or wrongly, are struggling in very unhappy marriages at the moment, and particularly my single clients. You know, I had one phone call from a client the other day who said he hasn't spoken or been with, even touched another human for 100 days.
Wow.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, look, it is an essential service, but it's also a physical service. So obviously, we can't work at the moment.
In terms of sex toys, I mean, how do you source your sex toys? Like, how does that all work? I mean, and how do you know what people want to buy? I mean, I guess you work in this industry or you have worked in this industry, but what are we talking about? I'm obviously vibrator is an obvious one, but what other things are we talking about? Plastic dolls or something?
There is a market for the plastic dolls. They're very, very expensive. We sell those. But look, there's some really high quality brands of sex toys like Lilo. Lilo is our best selling brand online. They do vibrators and sex toys for men, women and couples. And the best selling ones at the moment are something called Lilo Enigma, which is for women. And a man one, which is like a vibrator cock ring. But yeah, they're going great guns at the moment because people with disposable income still need to have intimacy, whether it's couples or by themselves. I mean, a man contacted us the other day saying he'd like to buy a self-pleasure toy because he was sick of using his hand. But yeah, there's a booming business in sex toys, and they're expensive. Sex toys are a couple of $100. So that is something that we are looking to do in the future. There's a huge gap in the market at the moment with Honey Burdette being sold to Playboy. We're looking at expanding the brand into high quality lingerie and sexual wellness, which includes sex toys. So that's where we're looking to next. There's a massive gap in the market. And I think these days people are more open about their desires, and mental health is a massive thing at the moment. Huge. You know, it's probably the most important issue we have. And I think during COVID, that's become even more apparent, loneliness and lack of intimacy and connection. So there's a huge gap in the market there.
Do you expect, I mean, everybody's sort of got pent-up demand to go to restaurants and go on holidays and just drive more than 5 kilometres to some extent away from their home, etc. There's probably going to be pent-up demand for people to use Samantha X's services, I would say. And what's interesting is this time last week I spoke to our federal treasurer and he said to me that the balance sheets of Australian individuals, in other words, each of us in general, he's talking about, because there's obviously some people who have suffered, but in general, our balance sheets have improved because we haven't been able to spend money like we ordinarily would spend our money. So those people who have increased balance sheets and also pent-up demand, they're just going to spend where there is pin back, big time.
I
would expect your industry is going to get pushed pretty hard. And do you, as a business person, do you say to yourself, okay, Samantha, the business will come back online. Do you pick a date? Do you say 1 December? And therefore, I've got to make sure I've got everything in place for 1 December. I've got to make sure I fill my website up with enough sex toys. I've got to fill my website up with enough workers. What do you do as a business owner?
Well, we make sure that we're well stocked with the toys and the lingerie. But it's not a case of when we open, it's just a click of a button and we're back on. You know, we haven't had to get rid of people, or, you know, we haven't lost our clients. They still contact me going, I can't deal with this anymore. When can you send me girls? And it's like, I can't do it. Can you imagine if I get caught doing that? I don't need that publicity. I really don't need that publicity. Yeah, it's just a case of as soon as the Premier says we're open, then we're open for business.
But what do you say to your workers? I mean, they're all sitting around eating the paint off the walls. I mean, how do you deal with that?
Well, women who work for us have other lives. They have other careers. They have, I mean, right. we had a girl, a lady that was a doctor in emergency at a hospital. You know, I always say to them, don't do this full time. Absolutely do not do this full time. See it as a hobby, you know, so they're not relying on this income.
Right.
And like I said, we have a lot of girls come and go, and they've all got, you know, their mums, or, you know, they're living secret lives or whatever. They've got other stuff going on. We don't have women that just sit around waiting for our phone call. And I don't want those kind of, I don't want that kind of pressure of having to support a family. I always say, you know, we're not the busiest agency in town, but we're boutique, but we have the most high quality gentlemen, which is true. I always say mental health over dollars any day of the week. And I'd rather my girls have one job a month, but a good quality job, than lots of little shitty jobs.
How big is the demand for male escorts, both from other males and from females? Is it growing?
Yes, it is. We don't manage male escorts. They just advertise with us. And
right.
I mean, I know women that have booked male escorts. I'm so intrigued. That's something I'm so intrigued about, booking a male escort. I never have. I'd be way too nervous, I think. But yeah, there's, I mean, I've spoken to the male escorts, and we interviewed one for a podcast, Slow Love Stories was the podcast series. And to me, how everyone thinks my stories are fascinating, I find their stories fascinating, the male escort. There's a massive demand. And the male escorts I've spoken to, their clients, female clients, range from 19-year-olds to 85-year-olds. And that the 85-year-olds, I'm so intrigued about, but they're widowers. They've, you know, lost their husbands. One escort told me that his client just wanted to sort of do a slow dance around the living room. And I just find it gorgeous. But yeah, male escorts are in huge demand at the moment because a lot of women are choosing to remain single and not marrying. And, you know, they're career women, and they're the ones that book the male escorts. And I think the female escorts are way more sexual. The female clients are way more sexual than our male clients. You know, females, we talk to our friends. We have that connection. We have that intimacy. So they really just want a good shag.
I have to be honest with you. Like, I'm intrigued. I mean, I can sort of understand a female escort, how she can sort of do the business. But like a guy, like he's got a, you know, he's got a...
Get a hard
on. Got to get a hard on. So, I mean, how the fuck did they do it? I mean, like, how can they just walk in and do that on demand, so to speak?
Yeah.
I mean, that must be some sort of skill.
Yes. Well, it is. And that's the first question I ask them is, how do you get a hard on for someone you're not attracted to?
Well, just walking in on a transaction, like, that'd be nerve-wracking for a start. I mean, like, you'd have to have pretty good fucking brain. Like, you have to have your head in the right space. I mean, like, that's intimidating.
Well, no. Well, first of all, no client ever wants to feel it's a transaction. So my job and the job of the girls that work for our agency is never to make it feel like a transaction. Yes. And the same would go for male escorts. I don't manage male escorts. I don't really know what goes on there, but I do know they have to get a hard on for someone they're not attracted to. And a lot of them use Viagra, and a few of them can do it. You know, they just go to that place in their head.
That's a skill.
Yeah, it's fascinating for me because I know people are intrigued by my story and my clients. I'm intrigued by male escorts and their story and whether they've ever walked out on a client or whether they've felt unsafe. And what do they do if there's someone really unhygienic, you know, and blah, blah, blah.
Have you got a podcast, have you?
We have, yeah. The podcast series is Slow Love Stories, and I interview a male escort, and it is fascinating because we've had an ex-lawyer male escort. They all have separate lives. You know, they've all got a double life. So, yeah, it's, you know, and a lot of them take Viagra because female escorts can fake orgasms. I mean, any woman can fake an orgasm. You don't have to be an escort. But for men, they can't fake it. And the pressure would be huge, you know, the pressure
totally.
Would be
huge. I mean, like, it'd be scary. Yeah. Really scary. Let's just shift across a little bit and talk about the other part of your business, which is the empowerment of women.
Mm.
You realize when you were a young woman that a woman does have power. And I don't mean in a sense that, and I'm sure you don't mean in a sense that you want to make use of that power or abuse that power, but at least accept that you do have power as opposed to being powerless as a woman. That I think that's sort of what you're saying. I mean, powerlessness is a big issue for women, but for a woman to understand that she does have power or that she can become empowered, that's a really solid undertaking. What does that part of your business do?
Well, I mean, for a start, I mean, although I say empowerment, it's such a banded around word at the moment from the media. Yeah. You know, what does it actually mean? When I wrote my books, my first book, Hooked, I wrote that in 2017, I think 2018, and then I wrote a second book, Back on Top. When I first decided to out myself as an escort, my goal was never to empower women. That I didn't even think about empowering women. That wasn't even on my radar. I didn't really know what that meant. I just was a journalist that became an escort and wrote a book about it. That's how I thought. And that I thought the story would end there. It is only when Vanessa, a lady called Vanessa, contacted me and she said, "Dear Samantha, I read your book on my honeymoon and you really made me feel empowered. Can I come and talk to you about helping you build your brand?" And look, I was all over the place at that time in my life. I was drinking too much. I was in the party scene. I was like, what is she even talking about? Anyway, this little feisty Italian turns up at my door with these folders and spreadsheets and everything. And I was like, what the TikTok. And she, Vanessa, had a great career in marketing already. And she said, she's this petite little, very conservative, normal, what I call normal person, you know, married and the grounded family, something which I craved. And she said, you don't realize it, but you have a really important message for women. You help women celebrate their sexuality. And then especially over the age of 40, you or your brand can make women understand that they're coming into their peak. Because I think so many women feel that they're invisible in their 40s. They've, you know, the ship has sailed. But I didn't realize that the message I was giving to women is that it's far from sailed. You haven't even launched yourselves yet. And that's when I realized I had something, or I could give women something. And that's what women were coming to me for, was how do you become confident? How do you have self-esteem? How are you confident in your body? How are you confident in your sexuality? And I thought, how are these women thinking I'm confident? Because I really felt like a fraud. I'm just Amanda. I just wrote a book. But Vanessa helped me believe that I had a really important message for women. And she is the one who has built my brand up. I'm the face of it. But Vanessa has given me lots of confidence to help women. And it's a joy to see women come into my living room and sit down on my sofa. You know, they're shy, they're insecure, they're apologetic. They've usually had nasty divorces, and then they become an escort, and I see them carry themselves differently. They're more confident. They've got disposable income, and it's really nice to see that. And you don't have to go into sex work to feel like that. I coach women. I have two websites, SamanthaX After Dark and SamanthaX.com.au. That's where I feel I empower women as well, is by, you know, they pay me a couple of $100 to have an hour session with me, and we talk about how to get confidence, how to be confident, how to believe in yourself, how to look the best you can look. And that goes with men as well. You know, I've had men that book me for those kind of sessions rather than intimacy sessions. They're booking me for coaching.
It's not therapy as such. You're not sort of pretending to be a therapist.
No.
You're coaching them about intimacy and or connections.
That's right. And, you know, it's like typical person in business. I'm very good at speaking about relationships, but I'm so bad at having them myself. It's a lot easier for me to see where someone else is going wrong in a relationship than for myself. And, you know, my comfort zone is being Samantha. If I'm going on a date in my real life, I'm terrified. So it's very easy for me to help people with getting a bit of Samantha in their lives, because that's what they want.
Do you regret anything?
Yes, I would be lying if I said I didn't. You know, while the truth can set you free, and I make a living of being authentic in my life and in my business life and my real life, it also comes at a huge cost. You know, I will always be known as that girl. Even if I gave it up and became a nun, I will still be that girl. And look, it's really hard to date. I don't know whether men want to date Samantha or Amanda, and I don't know who to be. I don't know whether to be Samantha or Amanda. You know, are they expecting me to have all these sex tricks and you know, they're with me because they just want to have sex with me, or do they actually want to get to know me? So I struggle with that, and I don't really date, to be honest. But also, you know, I spoke to a sportsman the other day, a well-known sportsman. We had a cup of tea together, and I said to him, don't you just wish you could be normal? You know, don't you wish you could be normal and just have a normal life? And he said, yes, but it's never going to happen. And it's not going to, you know, you are who you are, and you're not going to, you know, I'm not, I know that my life is controversial. I know it is. And I know that a lot of people close to me have had to deal with what I do. And there has been judgment from, you know, it's not just empowering women and that everything's great. Our business as well, we have faced stigma. I face judgment as well, but I know that everyone's a hypocrite, so I'm okay with that. But being vocal about the sex industry in a country like Australia, which I believe is quite conservative, I had to take a lot of flack for it. And do I wish I hadn't even opened my mouth sometimes? Sometimes I do. Yeah, sometimes I do. But then I see the women, and I see the men, and I hear the men, and I hear the women, and I think, well, this is my journey. This is my path. You know, and it gives me great joy to see women become more confident, and it also gives me great joy to see men and to hear men open up.
It's interesting, because what you just did, despite trials and tribulations of any business, at the end of the day, you're doing something that's valuable. You've brought it right back to the reason you do this stuff. I mean, the reason why people engage with you, because they want connection. And it's a basic human fundamental, I would call right. Not a privilege, it's a right. And notwithstanding there are lots of people who judge you, etc., if you bring yourself back to the reason why you are engaging in this business, then it's okay. That's probably a good message for everybody in business today. I mean, there's going to be trials and tribulations all the time in your business. I mean, there's going to be people going to criticize you. There's going to be people say you should have done this or you should have done that, or you should have done it a different way, or you're too expensive, or you're no good at your job, or someone in one of your staff is giving you a hard time, or, you know, you get divorced because of your business. But at the end of the day, the only way you can live your life is to go back to that one fundamental point. I did something in my business. You do something in your business. I do something in my business that's valuable to people. It's a fundamental, valuable thing, and add value to their lives, even if it might only be for an hour. And so you can hold your head up high at home when you look at yourself in the mirror. That's how I feel about what I do, the things that I do. I'm always looking for, my God, am I doing this? This is a punish. Why the fuck am I doing this? and sometimes it helps you get out of bed. Sometimes it helps you sleep. Sometimes it helps you work through all the shit that's happening around your life. So I really appreciate the way you articulated that. I think that's very, very good. It's high-level stuff. You know, I could talk to you for ages, but I'm running out of time. So I always give everyone an opportunity to ask me a question. I can sort of sense what question you're going to ask me, but I always give everyone an opportunity to ask me a question. What question would you like to ask me?
Look, Mark, I would love to ask you if you've paid for sex, but obviously you're not going to answer that. So I'm – would you? You would never answer that, would you?
You wouldn't believe my answer anyway. So
I would believe your answer. I don't think you have. But
no, you would, but I'm talking about my audience, I should say.
Look, you're obviously a very, very good businessman. You understand business. But my question to you is, do you understand women? And what have you learned? What's the surprising thing that you've learned about women in your life so far?
That's a very good question. Well, the first thing I would say that I've learnt about women is I don't understand women, and I'm still learning, and I continue to learn. I'm not a very sensitive person. I mean, I'm just a hard-nosed business guy. Yeah, I mean, so I see everything as pretty binary, you know, in either black or white, you know, one or the other. And I'm not very good on the sensitivity piece, whether it's with male staff, female staff, but women in particular. And but I also have noticed, like as I get older, that there is a merging between men and women. There's not a great deal of difference. And in fact, I probably don't understand men either, whereas I always thought I understood men. I always thought I understood the blokes. But I only understand a certain part or subsection of men. And it's people that I grew up with or people that are similar to me. And I really don't understand a lot of personalities and characteristics and sensitivities of both young and older men, particularly younger men. I don't understand a lot of the sensitivities and personalities and characteristics of women of all ages, although I'm better with much older women. I understand much older women much better. I don't really know what I have learned over a long time, Amanda, and I'm talking to Amanda now. I don't understand what people expect from me, because I've never really cared about what people expect from me, and whereas I should. I've always only been thinking about what I'm going to do for them, and in a sense that it's just about business. It's always just been about business for me. What can I do for the audience, male or female, in order that I can maintain this audience and sounds terrible, but make a buck. Here I am talking to someone in the sex industry, and that's all I ever gave a shit about, making a dollar, whereas everyone thinks that's all you give a shit about, but actually your business is about connecting with people and actually helping them and being valuable to them. I, on the other hand, have always thought about, how do I convert that into a dollar? How do I commercialize that? Particularly since my mother passed away, have I really started to think about how women feel and what's important to them? That's my answer.
Good answer. Thank you, Mark. Obviously, I'm intrigued now, but I can't. It's not after my turn to interview you.
Well, maybe when you do your podcast, yes. I'll come on and talk to you on your podcast. Yes. But it's been a fantastic interview. It's a one-off for me. I mean, when the team put it to me, I thought, yeah, cool, why not? Joe Rogan style, you know. Joe talks to everybody, and I should too. And everyone's got a good story from my point of view. But I found it quite intriguing, and your honesty and truthfulness, and you know, and your preparedness to open up and show us things that happen in the private world has been fantastic.
Ah, oh, thank you.
Thanks for listening to The Mentor. Audio and production is by Jess Morley, and production assistants Jonathan Leondis.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.